You're listening to Security Nation with host Kyle Flaherty.
Hey, everybody. It is Kyle Flaherty, and this is the Security Nation podcast here from Rapid7. I have Wade Woolwine, who's Director of Global Services. So, Wade, thanks so much for joining us again for this one.
An honor to be back, Kyle.
I know. I mean, you're our first return guest. This is a huge honor for you. I'm sure you're beaming. And then on the other side, so I got Wade in the Mid-Atlantic, and then we'll go down to Austin, Texas, while I'm here in Boston, Massachusetts. Todd Beardsley, who's Senior Research Manager at Rapid7. We were joking kind of in our pre-production and saying that. That makes it sound like we have this really, really well ironed out. But Todd and I have done these similar things in the past, but it's been probably 6 years or so, so it's nice to be kind of back on the train with you here, Todd.
I'm thrilled to be back talking podcastery with you, Kyle.
And you sound so good in that amazing headset that you're wearing right now. And shout out to Sebastian for that. All right. So for this pod, we are going to talk ransomware. And it's something that, depending on how tired you are of the word, certainly elicits a lot of different responses, to the point where my mom even asked me, no joke, last week about this thing, although she called it online kidnapping, which I think is something a little bit different. But for the sake of, clarity too, I'll try to pinpoint who I'm maybe pointing a question to, but both of you, and I know you're not, neither are shy, you'll jump in on all these no matter what. But Todd, I'll start with you. Kind of for the folks out there, and you actually had a really good blog post about this, but can you take us through kind of what is ransomware? Why are people kind of freaked out about this? Why is it in the news so much right now?
Sure. So ransomware is, I would say it's the latest, most reliable kind of online crime and you can perform and get paid. We've seen recently with like basically any report you care to look at, most online crime is financially motivated. The people perpetrating it want to be paid. Less so with like espionage and hacktivism and hijinks. Most of the crime is I need your money. And ransomware fits the bill on that. It's been around for a little while, about a decade or so, but it's really ramped up like in the last year to 18 months to maybe, let's say 2 years, with a number of pretty organized outfits running these ransomware campaigns. And so what is ransomware? You get hit by ransomware through a variety of means, which we can get into a little more detail. But the moral of the story is that you get this piece of malicious software, malware, that gives you a pop-up on your screen almost always that says, hey, I have encrypted your files. You will never see them again unless you pay me money. And here's how to pay me money. Often it's through Bitcoin. We're seeing a little more now with online payment processors that of various levels of shadiness, which makes it a ton easier actually for the bad guy to get paid and for the victim to pay. It's a lot easier for me to type in a credit card like in a dialog box than it is for me to like learn how to Bitcoin. Getting into Bitcoin is a little bit difficult. There are only a couple Bitcoin processors that make it even anything remotely easy to like trade credit cards for Bitcoin. So there is a somewhat of a learning curve for the victim, which is terrible, right? Like I've fallen a victim to a crime and now I have to learn how to like appropriately respond to this crime. But that's about ransomware kind of in a nutshell. You get a pop-up, it says I've gotten rid of your files. If you want them back, you have to pay up. To get yourself infected, for lack of a better term, with ransomware, there are, I'd say, like three main avenues. One, and the most popular, is you click on either scary-looking or enticing-looking link on the internet, and you download some malicious executable, and you run it. There are no exploits required. All it is like, hey, click here for like latest Chrome update, or click here for the latest, porn set or something like that. something that's enticing to the user is one tactic. Scaring the user is another. Like a scary looking pop-up ad that says you have viruses detected on your computer and it's totally running slow. You should click here to fix it. So something along those lines. That's the probably the main way you'd see these incidents kind of kick off. So it's pretty straight. There's no, like I said, there's no exploits required. All it is tricking the user into installing something they oughtn't. The more sophisticated, and by sophisticated I mean the criminals are working harder on this one, are the use of active exploits. So you might have a website that's been compromised, or an advertising network that runs on that website that's been compromised, or it's just like a straight-up evil website, and they will attempt to exploit a browser vulnerability or a browser plugin vulnerability, almost always these days, Java, Flash, or PDF reader, Adobe PDF reader, one of those three kind of broad categories of vulnerable software, those will get exploited, and then you don't have to click on anything. It just happens in the background. That's a little more useful for the criminals because you're not alerted ahead of time. It doesn't require the victim to really do anything other than visit a website. The downside for that, though, is that those can get detected by like normal and traditional like online defenses, things like antivirus, anti-malware, things like network intrusion prevention systems. These can all be detected that way. So you have it's a little bit of a trade-off from the criminal's point of view. And the third way is the third way would be through like email attachments or webmail, but I guess we all call webmail email. So email attachments, which again are going to be either you click on a thing and install it, or it's like an Office vulnerability that gets exploited by the malware. And so once all that happens, now you've got the ransomware in your system.
All right. So that makes sense. So why are we seeing, and Wade, we'll start with you, and then Todd, definitely pipe in. You know, it just seems like it's everywhere now. Is it just because it is, and it's because of the three avenues that Todd just went through? Obviously, we got these syndicates who are really kind of pushing this stuff out there. It's an easy way to make money, blah, blah, blah. Or is it just a really sexy story that, you know, is seemingly just easy for people to grasp, so of course the news is putting that out there more and more?
So I'm going to jump in and burn the script down because I have a fourth method. This is actually hot off the presses.
Is off script.
Breaking news, I tell you.
Yeah, we need – all right. We'll insert some breaking news sounds right here. But, yeah, please, go ahead.
Perfect. So a fourth infection vector. I had never heard about this before. I had a conversation with a former colleague of mine. They have investigated a breach where an attacker has compromised a web server by traditional means, and they have deployed ransomware on that web server, infecting the critical web server files and so on and so forth, and leaving a ransom notice on the homepage of the website. So brand new infection vector. New way of using ransomware, not necessarily broadly impacting people, but very much impacting a critical asset to most organizations, their website or their community. So that was a really interesting infection vector that we had not seen before. And going back on script now, talking about
let's hit pause. I want to ask a question about that. So, you know, so then they, and obviously this is, you know, we'll see how much we can dive into it, but is that then, so the ransom at that point is, if you want your website back, we want our money.
Exactly.
Okay. That is breaking
news. It was impressive. The price tag was also significantly higher for this particular one than the ones you see in common larger spread infections.
I wonder if that's going to pick up.
So as far as
because that's a thing, right?
Like, what was that, Todd?
It all depends on you not having backups. And if I'm running a website,
yep.
I'm way more likely to have a backup than if I'm just like using my family computer or gaming PC or something like that.
Yep. Yep, so it is. It is a lot more tricky.
Successful that would be, for the criminal's point of view. Also, when you're up in the price tag, like you, you can almost draw like a almost one-to-one graph on that, right? You know, the more the pricier it is, the less likely they're going to pay, and you want to hit that sweet spot. So I'm curious to see how that goes, like over the next 6 months, 12 months, if that's going to be viable.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm in a similar position, Todd. I am very curious to see if this actually takes off as a new infection vector.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things that too is it's the size of the organization and maybe the maturity of the organization there too, where, you know, you might be able, and it goes back, I guess, to Todd's point of the amount you ask for, but if it's a smaller company who maybe, you know, that website's a big deal, but they actually don't even think about backups, or they just panic, and
right.
It's just easier to do that. It could be, you know, there's plenty of mom and pop businesses out there that you could probably make, you know, some decent amount of money. So I'm assuming too it's going to be about the industry and then the size of the organization.
Yeah, absolutely. And in this particular case, they also encrypted the database files. So unless you have true incremental backups, restoring
right.
some of that content from the database might actually be more difficult than just the regular kind of core web server files.
Cool. All right.
So why is it prolific?
Yeah,
exactly. Why is it so prolific right now? Look, it's working. That's why. So, you know, the stories are hitting the news. All the other attack groups are like, well, damn, we're leaving like $10,000 on the table. We need to go do this too. So that's why I think you're seeing a lot more of it. And let's face it, you know, as a human society, we're click happy. We always want videos
right, yeah.
of cats.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and I think that's a huge part of that as well.
Only does it work, but it's also really seamless from the attacker's point of view. Like if I, you know, compromise your machine through one means or another, you're just like, and I'm talking about like the home client, you know, desktop or whatever, and I steal your financial login information or I steal your credit card number, which is what we're quite used to, I still have to do a whole lot of work to turn that into like cash in my pocket. Whereas if I, you know, get you to pay me directly, I mean, I've cut out like so many other steps of my criminal enterprise, and I can move faster, I can cast wider nets and get a faster response, and I get to trade on my reputation as a bad guy. You know, if you have a particular strain or brand of ransomware that doesn't pay up, like let's say I pay the $200 or whatever it is and I don't get my data back, I'm going to tell everybody about it and I'm going to be all angry. But if I get hit by something like CryptoWall, which has kind of turned its reputation around, you know, anything calling itself CryptoWall will get probably a better hit because it's getting to be known as like, yeah, these guys really do pay up. They unlock and they don't charge very much. And incidentally, I get to learn about Bitcoin along the way, so it's a little fun. Probably not for most people.
So there's some sort of a criminal credo here too. Of you know, if they actually don't do what they promise, then they're gonna get
if they don't do it, then no one will
too.
Pay. And so like, and if they don't do it in
right.
aggregate, no one will pay. So I think that as long as this like cow is there to be milked, you know, they're gonna keep milking it. It would be very foolish for a you know somebody who's behind a widespread and kind of well known brand of ransomware to just suddenly pull the plug and say we're not gonna release the data anymore. And it's really easy for them to release the data because they already have a communication path to the victim that's pretty reliable enough for them to give the demand and then get paid. So it doesn't cost them anything really at all to make good. I mean, it does bring up the question of like, well, if you pay, do you now are you a mark? Like, will you pay forever?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know because like once you've hit this once, I mean, hopefully it's a catastrophe for you, and you treat it like a catastrophe. You don't pay like you know your $50 a month like don't steal my stuff tax. Ideally, you kind of get ahead of this before the next time of you know maybe invest in some kind of malware thing or not click on everything that you see or maybe disable plugins or just like Google around ransomware. Like you Google the word ransomware, you're going to get page after page of advice, you know, of how to avoid it. So.
Well, and I think so. And so that jumps into kind of the I think one of the I don't even know, the word's probably not controversial, but at least it's a sticky topic. And so Monday, the FBI, you know, kind of came out and put out an alert on these types of attacks. And I mean, they've done that in the past for sure, but they also encourage businesses to not pay these ransoms. And so, you know, it's a tough call, I guess, and it's based on the business and where you're at and things like that. But, you know, if you don't have that data,
by the way, the ransom. we have this whole thing about not funding terrorism, and you don't know where this is going. So that's something to consider. Like, if you don't want to pay criminals to be criminals, don't pay. that's like an ethical choice, and then you have a practical choice of like, well, I don't have backups, so I have to pay to get like pictures of my grandkids back. Well, I mean, that's a choice to make. You know, obviously, we can all say like, well, you should have backups, and that's why I don't. You know, I would hope that coming out of this, everyone has backups all the time. I mean, that would be a great outcome for this period. But right now, we're kind of in the thick of it. Where people aren't so great with their backups. They've never been. No one has ever been very good at backups. Would you agree, Wade? I don't know. Like, it's shocking to me every single time. Like, anyone I know that their computer breaks or their phone breaks, I'm like, oh, I lost all my pictures. How do you get it yourself in this situation?
Yeah, and you're absolutely right, Todd. Not just at the individual consumer level, but even at the enterprise level, it's shocking to see how many organizations either don't have a backup plan in place or never test it, so that when push comes to shove and they need to restore data, they're finding that actually the backup process was broken for the last 6 months.
I mean, I think the healthiest thing to do in the face of ransomware is treat it like treat it like a disaster and pull out your disaster recovery binder, which A, is weirdly printed on a binder, and B, you probably haven't touched it in a while. I mean, because if you treat it as like cost of doing business, well, I mean, there are a lot of, you know, there are a lot of social concerns with that and a lot of ethical concerns with that. And by the way, also like procedural concerns. Ideally at the end, though, like you learn the lesson of, gee, I really should have backups. So even if this does happen to me again, like I won't be negotiating from such a weak position.
Right. True. And so, you know, and that floats too to, all right, so beyond backups, let's talk about, all right, let's assume I got there. What are some other kind of tips that you guys would share in terms of, you know, protecting yourselves from this beyond, of course, the, you know, Wade, to your point earlier, of we're a click-happy culture, you know, or we can talk about this, you know, the importance of obviously teaching your employees and getting their own security maturity level kind of up there. What other things kind of rise to the top specific to ransomware for you guys? And Wade, I'll start with you.
Education is the big one. You kill so many birds with one stone when you properly provide education for your employee base. Things like, you know, don't click on emails. If you receive a request to transfer money, why don't you go and verify with that person that made that request face-to-face or even over the phone? You know, those process-driven improvements that you can only achieve through your end-user education are really going to be extremely valuable from a mileage perspective. Not only can you potentially prevent cryptoware, but you may also prevent a targeted threat actor from being able to spearfish your users. But beyond that, you know, general sanity of your computing environment. Make sure that you're not waiting a month to apply patches. Make sure that you are doing proper vulnerability identification and management. Make sure that you have antivirus and spam gateways that have their signatures up to date and are able to identify some of these variants of cryptoware that come in. And this is one of my favorite because I always get the funniest looks when I suggest it. Don't use network shares. For the love of God, don't use network shares. Every businessman in the world is going, yeah, that guy's smoking crack because that's how we share data. Well, that's not the only way that you need to or that you can share data. There are collaboration systems that offer much more functionality than your standard network share does. Look at leveraging some of those as part of your business processes. Really try to minimize the amount of automated spreading that can happen in an enterprise environment. And you know, mind you, these are suggestions primarily for the business case, but you know, they could apply, I guess, in the personal case. Todd, do you have any suggestions on what Kyle's mom can do at home?
Well, I'm busily wiping the tears away from my eyes from imagining a future without SMB shares. That would be amazing. You know, and look, I love Microsoft. I love Microsoft products. I use them. SMB shares, man, that is the bread and butter of every penetration test is something involving SMB. So you put a little friction in on this whole like file transfer thing, because you can't email everybody files all the time, because that flies in the face of the other advice of like, don't click on things you get an email.
Right, exactly.
Right, it's like, yeah, we don't use SMB shares, but we email each other Office Docs 12 times a day. that's not going to work either. But there are very decent modern collaboration tools for documents and Civic for sharing data. There's just so many better ways that are much more authenticated that often have some kind of barrier to, like I said, friction, some kind of barrier, like some kind of authentication token that has to happen first, which is a little bit of a hassle, but man, once you get used to them, like it's no problem. As far as like home users, I would say like you have to make the distinction, because here's the thing with backups and home users. There are very reasonable, like pure play backup solutions out there, right? You do, like Wade said earlier, like backups are not all that great if you never try them, never test them out. But we kind of live in this like cloud service environment now. We do a ton of things on our phones, which almost all phones have some kind of sync capability. Just treating your computer like your phone may be like a more healthy way to do it. Now, you also open yourself up to an entirely different kind of problem, and that's like the privacy information that you're sharing with, you know, whoever your hosting provider is. And this is like, this is something you have to like decide, right? Like, do I, A, have a very nice and seamless backup solution to guard against total disaster, which, by the way, may not be ransomware. It may be like, you know, fire or, you know, your kid knocks your computer off the table or something like that, right? Like that's treat it like an equal to that level of disaster, and just start thinking about that. You know that like Apple stuff has Time Machine, which is pretty easy to set up like in your house, and there's a bunch of the Windows stuff. It's Carbonite, which is great. I love it. But having like an always on, always online method of operating can free you up from that physical device at, of course, the perhaps cost of sharing personal data out with your cloud provider that you have to trust. So that would be probably the one thing I would do there. Secondly, like when it comes to downloading software and installing software, unless you know what you're doing, like stick with the normal, usual routes to do that. That usually means paying for software. If you want to do open sourcey things, that's great. I'm a huge fan of open source. I love using open source software. Make sure that open source project is itself sane. They do things like offer downloads over HTTPS instead of HTTP. They have regular patch systems like you see in Microsoft and Apple. Other open source projects sometimes are a little more unpredictable with their patching. So I'm not saying don't use open source. Totally use open source. I love it. But if you do, pick open source providers that themselves have at least thought a little bit about like the back end security. Otherwise, you're looking to get owned through, fake downloads, fake updates. Like there was one for Android not too long ago that advertised itself as a Chrome APK update for Android. So you would never see this on the Google Play Store, but you would see it on, you know, kind of shadier software distribution sites for Android.
So, and, you know, Wade hit on the, make sure you're patching, and, you know, you're kind of hitting on that as well, just from a personal standpoint that you're doing the right way. But,
it's super easy to patch at home, right? Like, you have Windows Update, which is automatic. OS X,
right.
So the Apple stuff is automatic. iOS is automatic. Android is automatic whenever, you know, the stars align and the patches are actually available for Android. But they are all automatic, so it's not there's so little excuse today for like just basic levels of like operating system patches.
For personal folks, for the business, a little more difficult. Patch management obviously can be a challenge overall. But the question I had was kind of around the, you know, the potential vulnerabilities that these guys are exploiting. Are we seeing any sort of trend from that standpoint of, you know, they're exploiting, you know, vulns that are real new and fresh, or there's ones that have just lying, you know, dormant, but people didn't think they were necessarily exploitable? Is there any sort of trend for ransomware that we're seeing when it comes to kind of the vulnerability side of things?
For the vulns, I would say, you know, it's real disconnected. Like I said earlier, like a lot of these, most of them are not exploit and vulnerability related. They don't require any exploits at all. So you can patch all day long and you're not going to stop that strain. You have to really actually just stop clicking on things. Don't fall for scams, you know. So like that's super easy to say. It's a little harder to train. For the ones that do exploit vulnerabilities, they tend to hit, it's a patchwork. Sometimes we see like super fresh O-Day vulnerabilities getting exploited. Never seen it before, you know, some campaign is using it. Sometimes they're a year, 2 years old. This is especially true in the Android stuff. Crypto Police is the hotness this week. It's a drive-by download for Android that makes use of some older, I guess like almost a year and a half old exploits to elevate privileges on that. So like, it doesn't super matter though, because Android, like I said, you know, like I indicated earlier, sometimes getting patches for Android is a hassle. When it comes to things like Windows and browser plugins, they can. It's going to be all over the map. It goes from O day to, you know, 700 day. So. And hitting people with a 700-day vulnerability, I mean, it kind of tells you about how much they care about their environment. It may be a choice by the criminals to like, well, if I only exploit older vulnerabilities, I'm pretty sure that person also doesn't care about backups. So my throughput is going to be better. If I have to do a ton of work to exploit like a particular machine, this person may be on the ball and may not, you know, is not going to pay. And so I'm going to go through a lot of effort, more effort than I normally would, in order to not get paid at the end. It's very similar to like the intentional grammar and spelling errors that you see in like the Nigerian Prince, you know, email scams. It's not that they don't have a good command of English. They do. They've been at it for like 15 years now. It's to weed out people who are not critically thinking about the message.
And that's interesting because we actually talked a lot about critical thinking, Wade and I, in our first podcast, and that reminds me a lot of that one. But let me ask one last question. Wade, I'll start on your end and actually ask you to put a little bit more of your services kind of hat on when it comes to this stuff. And we've hit on this a little bit, but I want to be pretty clear overall. You know, if there's a company, it hits them in this sense, and that customer calls the hotline, calls exactly, you know, what you're supposed to do and what your team kind of is built to do as well, is help folks in potentially in a situation like this. What's the first thing you kind of, what would you say to that person? They just got on the phone with you, they're panicked. What's the first thing out of your mouth?
Do you have backups?
I could have predicted that one.
Yeah, you really should have been able to. But I mean, it's true, right? So once crypto has hit, you have two choices, you know, burn it to the ground and rebuild it with backups or pay the ransom. And
right.
I rarely advocate paying the ransom just because I don't have a whole lot of faith in the integrity of attackers.
Right. And they're going to change on a dime anyway. And you should treat it like a disaster. Like every business that has any kind of like insurance is going to have some kind of disaster recovery plan, ideally. They may have never looked at it, and they may have never exercised it, but you have to hit your disaster recovery at that point.
Yeah, blow the dust off
that.
And
that folder.
Yep. What we end up doing on the services side is just recommending that that the customer try to recover the best that they can and then engage with us so that we can work with their disaster recovery program, work with their incident detection and response program to help them be more resilient against this kind of threat in the future.
Awesome. All right, guys. We have talked for almost a half hour at this point, and that's fantastic.
We're going to edit this down to 5 minutes, right?
Right. Yeah, we're going to edit, and basically, it's just going to be me asking that last question and Wade saying,
right,
do you have
right.
backups? And then that's really, I mean, that was all we had to do at this point. Awesome. Well, you guys, I really appreciate it. I enjoyed the conversation, as I'm sure folks out there listening did as well, and we'll be sure to get you guys back on the pod as fast as possible and continuously talking about this stuff. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks.
Thank you. Always a pleasure to chat with you, gentlemen.
Awesome.
Bye, guys.